I think all of us can benefit from having the courage to put ourselves out there and be vulnerable and put our work out there, because I know my life has been changed by a lot of the fiction that I've read, and the world could benefit hugely from the work that you're able to put out there. And I think a lot of people don't realize how many people need their art, and you just have to make it and put it out there and have that courage, and it'll pay off.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we've got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends. Courtesy of the wonderful podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts. And if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed, my friends. That's right indeed, because we've got a digital nomad in his house, y'all. That's right indeed. So she's wandering around the globe with the laptop in her freaking hands and her backpack and slaying dragons and sailing the seven seas with a pirate hat, with a sword in one hand and a Hello Kitty plushie in the other hand. And she's also a wonderful entrepreneur as well as a freelance writer. So let's give it up for the A to the S, the amazing and sensational Amy Sudo. How you doing today, Amy?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Dom. I feel so much cooler now. I'm so excited to be here.
Excited to have you. I'm like, shoot, all right, cool. Another digital nomad has been, 12 months since I've last chatted with one for the show. So it's like, all right, cool. In a different perspective, she's killing it on Substack. She's got a new book out. She writes multiple genres. You'll love to see it.
Thank you. No, it's been really cool. I think that as a digital nomad and an author, I think that you kind of get a little bit of a different perspective of the world, and being able to travel and meet different people and learn how to train and become a samurai in a dojo in Kyoto and then scale Machu Picchu and the Inca Trail, like being able to have all these crazy experiences really helps to inform the work.
Heck yeah, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. So indeed, so my goodness, as with all introductions, I'm not allowed to be 17.5 years long. I probably only covered, 17.5 seconds. So my filling is in on how you became the amazing Amy that you are today.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to the journey, I started my writing career when I arrived in Los Angeles and was like, how do I become a professional writer? How do I make writing my job? And my first kind of attempt at answering that was becoming a professional TV writer in Hollywood. But when I finally scaled the ladder and got to write an episode of one of my favorite shows, I looked around and I'm like, I don't know if this is the right place for me. I don't feel like I'm exactly in the right atmosphere. And so when the pandemic hit, I took that as an opportunity to start traveling the world with friends. And through that, I also started ramping up my memoir ghostwriting business, where I write business books and memoirs for Olympians and CEOs all over the world. And then through doing that, I also created room for my fiction in my debut fiction book, which just came out a few weeks ago, called The Nomad Detective, which is a series of short stories that are all serialized about the nomad detective who travels the world solving crimes from Costa Rica to Machu Picchu. And it's kind of like an encapsulation of some of the underground of the digital nomad community, all of the true crime that nobody is posting about on Instagram, and the things that go wrong when you travel.
Am I getting John Wick vibes here?
There's no dog being murdered. So, you know, things are good.
Oh, well, I wasn't thinking about that part. I was just saying, is there like a secret continental, some random hotels? All right, you gather here. It's under Machu Picchu. It's been here for like a millennia. We don't tell people about it unless you become a digital nomad 50,000 years into the future or something.
Yeah. I can't reveal all of the secrets of being a digital nomad, only some of them.
Yeah, one of these days we got to get Holly Bear on the show. Maybe she'll tell us. Or better yet, Keanu Reeves himself. That's right, indeed. He's like, tell us your secrets. It's like, I don't know.
I know,
man.
And he published a book too recently.
Oh yes, right, he did. It's a new novel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh shit, that might actually become a reality. All right, cool. Cool. All right. That's right. Law of attraction. Speak things into existence. That actually happened this time. That's right, indeed. Come through for a brother, indeed. But hey, it's about the amazing Amy today. So by goodness, writing in Hollywood and probably feeling like a canary in the cage. You finally got let out the cage. Actually, how was it? How was that process to becoming a digital nomad? Did you just say up and say, I quit, I'm going to grab my partner, we're going to travel the globe, or was it a let go situation?
Yeah. So in the beginning of the pandemic, when everybody was kind of working remotely, we grabbed a bunch of our friends. We're like, Airbnbs are really on sale right now because everyone is sanitizing their groceries and their, you know, their Amazon delivery packages. So I think we can travel and be in nature instead of in our like apartments in Los Angeles and like the middle of the epicenter of the end of the world. And so our first destinations were Nashville and Colorado and Palm Springs. And so we just kind of rented out these houses and split them with all of our friends. And it was such a cool opportunity to be traveling out in the world and to be around hiking trails and nature, like real hiking trails, not like Los Angeles hikes. And so that was kind of the first foray of being around community and, you know, quarantining in these different places. And then when we were able to travel internationally and those restrictions lifted, we headed to Europe, where we spent 2 months in Italy. We spent some time in Budapest and Prague. And then after that, it was like, okay, this is going to be full-time travel. And so for the last 4 years, I've been a digital nomad because I just couldn't get enough of this idea that you can unwrap a new place and a new culture and just take your laptop and work anywhere. And I think that that's the allure of being a digital nomad. And then also, of course, there's the adventure side of things where you can be kind of finding yourself in the middle of nowhere in Peru, hiking this legendary trail and just feel like the magic of your surroundings and then allow that to bleed into the work that you're bringing to the world, into your storytelling, and to also, you know, kind of meet different people in different cultures and learn things from them, both for your personal development as well as for your fiction.
Be lucky indeed. She's like, yeah, play, we're going on real hikes, y'all. That's right, indeed. There ain't no spiritual quest here, y'all. It's real trees, you know. Ain't no random tree that's from a random TV series scene over here. That's right, indeed. It's a tree that no one knows about yet. Yeah, that's right, D. That's right, D. So, my goodness, and if I'm not mistaken, you actually been to Okinawa, Japan recently. Was it this year, I believe, or was it last year?
I was in Kyoto and Tokyo in Japan.
Okay, cool. And doing samurai training, no less.
Yeah, it was really cool. We were able to train at a real dojo that has, you know, it's a working dojo, so they train students. And so we not only got to take a real katana and slice up some things, but we also saw the students do real demonstrations about, you know, how the different ways that they wield the katana and like how they would like take out different opponents. It was very cool.
I can imagine. That's right, indeed. Cooler than three cucumbers, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. So, my goodness. So, what locations are next on the list for your wandering?
Yeah. So, the next stop on our trip is Madeira. Have you heard of Madeira at all?
No. Where is
that? It's kind of weird. It's off the beaten path, but it's actually this like the Hawaii of Europe. It's this island off the coast of Portugal, and it is basically so green and beautiful, and it has some legendary hikes above the cloud line. And there's like a digital nomad village where there's this digital nomad hotel called Outsite that's like right on the water, and all these nomads come to work remotely from this little town called Ponta de Sol. And so we're headed there for a whole month to do hiking and writing and to meet up with some of our nomad friends. And so that is the next stop on the journey.
Ooh, all right. Cool. That's right, indeed. They probably don't market that area that much. Like, don't tell anybody. We're going to get on intruders.
It's another secret.
It's like, yep. That's right, indeed. If anyone asks about us, we got to redirect the site to Hawaii. So it's like they go there. Yeah, go there.
Yeah.
They won't know a thing. We'll hide everything in green. They won't know a thing. It'll be foolproof. It's like fluffing a pillow. It's a foolproof plan. So with all your travels, my goodness, what consider your top three lessons learned from all of them thus far?
Yeah, I think the first lesson is to figure out what are the things that you want to learn in different places, because I think that when you can go to a place with the intent of learning something, whether it's learning about the history of a place, or we went to Italy to learn how to make pasta, which was a really cool experience, and we obviously went to Japan to learn how to be samurai, and trying to kind of figure out like what is the thing that you want to learn from a place really helps to enrich the experience and also give you a life skill. And I think that that's really cool and special to be in a place to absorb something that is culturally relevant or hyper local to that area. And I think that that is a really exciting way to kind of infuse your travels. And then the second thing that I would say is to really kind of not overpack your schedule as a digital nomad, because not only are you balancing work and not creative work and different things, but I think some of my favorite moments have been just found in serendipity, just walking down the street and finding my favorite little food market here in London, my favorite chai tea guy, my favorite kind of like random little hidden gem. And I think that a lot of the towns that I've been in the different cities, you get the most by just allowing yourself to explore and be out in the world. And then the third thing is to try and figure out after you leave a place what you've taken away from it and what you want to do differently in your intention going into the next month. Because sometimes with travel, it can be a little chaotic. And I think it's really important to build time for reflection. And that's also why I started my travel blog at amysudo.com, where I also blog about every destination I've ever been to, the places that I think are the hidden gems, the best places to eat, where to stay in town, as well as my impressions of a place and what I think is so special about it, or what I think is kind of horrendous about it, because there's definitely been some destinations we've been to where I'm like, you don't need to go here. I've done that for you. And I think that there's some very touristy places that people should avoid. And so I think that building in those opportunities for reflection is really important for digital nomads, especially people who are creative and especially writers, where you need to kind of have that breath of fresh air in between all of the adventure to be able to kind of sit and immerse yourself in the experience before you let it go.
Me luck indeed. Good point about the not overloading yourself as a nomad, because it's like, sure, you probably got bright eyes like, hey, let me do everything, let's do it all in one day. That's right indeed. When it's like, no, it's not gonna happen all the way, because there's so many things you probably wouldn't do, especially if it's the first time you're in a location.
Yeah, definitely. I felt that way when we were in Peru. It was kind of like nonstop because there's so much we could do. We did an ATV tour of the Sacred Valley. We did cooking lessons and learned how to make all these Peruvian cuisine dishes and really beautiful things. We did a market tour. We did a walking tour. We did so much that it felt a little overwhelming to deal with all of that. And then the altitude is so intense. But you're up at, I think, 12,000 feet is where Cusco, the town, is. An elevation above sea level, and it's intense. So it's like, I think that it is so easy to just say yes to everything. And so as a nomad, you kind of have to be disciplined and know yourself and give that space to just live in a place, because that's actually one of the most special parts of being a nomad, is that you're not just visiting, you're not just running around doing touristy stuff. You actually get to sit in a place and live in a place that's different from your hometown.
Yeah, yes, ma'am, indeed. So true indeed. That's right. So my goodness, and being able to manage a wonderful writing career. And the thing is, you ain't just like writing blogs and books, you're also girls to write too, and also, if I'm not mistaken, do copywriting too. So my goodness, so all those wonderful things just meshing together, like, how do you manage all of it? Do you like take on one ghostwriting project a year or something in addition to your other stuff? Like, how does your workflow work in that regard?
Yeah, anytime that I'm doing memoir or book ghostwriting, I'm very focused on that client. I was recently in Singapore to meet with one of my clients, so sometimes I'll even fly out to see my clients if the travel aligns. But I think it's really important that if you are hiring a memoir ghostwriter, you really want that person to have enough space and energy in their schedule to give you some really high quality writing hours. Because I think with ghostwriting, I've met so many clients who wasted so much money hiring either amateur ghostwriters or ghostwriters that were overstretched. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize how much a team sport making a book requires. Like, you not only need a ghostwriter, you need a cover designer and a book marketer, because there's no point in embarking on a journey of making your book real unless you're willing to go all the way and put as much emphasis in the writing portion as in the marketing portion. And I think that that's really important. And I collaborate with a bunch of different book marketers that I loop into different projects to help clients find success with their books. And I think that one thing that people don't recognize is like how much writing and publishing a book changes your life. And what I see with a lot of my clients is that there's the before they publish their book and then the after. And those two halves of their lives look very different. And my clients who have seen their books published have stepped on the stages of the TED Talks, who have, they've seen their name in like tons of publications. They've seen their business revenue increase by like incredible magnitudes. And they've also been able to kind of have this like satisfaction of people reading their story and reaching out to them and being like, thank you for sharing your story and for inspiring another generation of entrepreneurs or people who kind of saw themselves in their story. And so I think that there's so much beauty in writing and publishing a book, and it is a sacred process. And I think that a lot of the clients that I work with see it as such and therefore take it seriously. But I think the sticker shock of how expensive it is can kind of shake some people if they're not really kind of thinking about all of the things that come after publishing a book in terms of speaking engagements and different awards and different like opportunities that kind of come out of the woodwork because your book is out there. And that's something I've experienced in publishing my own books as well, but something that I think people don't really recognize how much their life can change until they've actually seen their book out there, or they know somebody who has published a book and done it right and really kind of reap the benefits of that.
Reaping all the benefits. That's right, indeed. That's right. You'll be the happy reaper, not the grim reaper. As a result.
I hope so. If you do it right, you will.
That's right, indeed. If you do it right, you'll be the happy reaper. Be like, yes, I've come. Oh, now it's the grim reaper. Oh, don't worry, I'm the happy reaper. Here's a little plush smile emoji for you. I'm like, what? Oh, like, wait, you've been around this whole time? Like, yes. I just don't show up as much. I'm so happy. Other places, I'm not as fast as the Grim Reaper. Yeah, because it's so true. So true. It's right, indeed. So inspired you to jump into the world of fiction writing, you decided to write a fiction novel that released, I believe, 3 weeks ago at the time of this recording.
Yeah, when it comes to my fiction journey, obviously I had my career in TV writing. I also spent some time writing and producing scripted podcasts, but I've always had a love for books, and I grew up working in my family's bookstore and packing and shipping detective novels. And so I've kind of always had this love of books, and it's something that I, of course, spend pretty much all of my time working in books in some capacity. And when I decided to write this book, I got the idea in Argentina. I woke up in the middle of the night in Buenos Aires and was thinking about all of the stories that I'd heard recently about all this true crime and all the things that were going wrong in Argentina and all these nomads that we knew who were kind of in the worst case scenario. And that kind of encouraged me to start to think more about what is kind of like the mysteries that are out in the world, especially in this community of expats and digital nomads and long-term travelers. Like, what is kind of like the layer that we don't see? And who is solving those crimes? Because if a crime is jumping borders, then it's really hard to get local police to do anything. And so often if people are wanting to solve those crimes, they have to get help elsewhere. And I was like, why haven't we seen a digital nomad Sherlock Holmes? Like, why haven't we seen a private eye that's going out there and like doing the work, like to really kind of dig into a disappearance or a murder or something like that? And so I took a lot of inspiration from obviously Sherlock Holmes and the Agatha Christie stories, and also kind of blended that with my observations and experiences of these places, and then added a whole bunch of fictional characters and really kind of spent the time trying to think about how to craft these mysteries while also building the journey of my lead detective, Detective Violet Chase, who is trying to find her missing sister who went missing in Guatemala. And she is out here in the world solving these cases, hoping to get closer to that while also confronting her demons and her past.
Yes, right. Day demons in the past, Charles. Scary. Scary work indeed. I imagine, especially in the Machu Picchu era. It's like, oh.
Definitely.
It's like, hey, an artifact. Ah, darn my hands. It hurts. Why? Indiana Jones again. No. It was the crystal skull. What the heck happened? Well, man, so was it hard making the switch to writing some wonderful novels even after all your reads and the studies of Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes?
Not quite. I grew up writing novels for National Novel Writing Month. So I wrote a novel every month or every November for 6 years straight. And so it was kind of just like stepping back into old habits of getting back into the fiction writing that I did in Hollywood and for kind of these other formats like scripted podcasts, but really kind of approaching it more from prose. So it was more kind of just like getting back into the prose mindset. But it wasn't too difficult. And I think that the hardest part of writing fiction is trying to kind of understand the mental blocks that keep you from writing good fiction and allowing yourself to write some bad fiction in order to get to the good stuff and having confidence that if you just sit down and write every day or write most days and you set word count goals for yourself and being outcome oriented of just like, I'm going to write, 3,000 words a day. And if they're good or bad, as long as I hit that word count, I'm good. That kind of mindset will help you more than if you sit down at your computer and being like, I'm writing a masterpiece every day, which will only increase the writer's block and the fear and the insecurity. Because when you're writing fiction, it is very different from nonfiction because you're telling a story that you're hoping people immerse themselves in and lose themselves in and get lost in your story. And that's almost a higher level of magnitude sometimes because it's all made up. And I think that some of the greatest feedback I've gotten so far is people who have been telling me that they've been reading this book in like a day or two. They've just been like completely like taking these stories and just reading the whole thing and they just get lost in it. And that is such high praise that I love to hear as a writer because it means I'm doing my job right. I'm not pulling them out of the story. Like they're getting lost into this world that I'm building for them. And they have to keep reading. And I think that every writer should aspire to write a page turner, whether you're a memoir writer or a fiction writer. If you're writing a page turner, it means you've done something right.
Pun intended. What's talking about? So heard blocks. Oh my goodness. So in your opinion, what are the blocks to writing good fiction?
Yeah, I think it's mostly related to our fear of what our reputation will be like once we publish the book. And a lot of people are afraid that, oh, I'm going to feel silly or people are going to make fun of something that I've written or, the world is going to not take me seriously or, if I write this, who am I going to offend? And so I think that a lot of the problems with the writing process is we can allow those other critics and our own inner critic to talk us out of writing something instead of being bold and kind of shutting off all the critics and just being like, I'm writing this thing. And then I will go back and think about like how my reader's experience will be later in a different pass. Because I think that while we still need to write to be read and write for an audience, we also need to write something that is true to our vision and authentic and bold and inspiring. And I think that we have to, really go to the places that we think will be the most exciting and makes us feel alive and write it in a way that captures our readers' attention. So it's a lot of like insecurity, I think, that writers have to get to the core of. And I think that at the end of the day, we have to be bold and being, I'm going to put out a book and then if people are going to love it, if they're going to hate it, it doesn't matter. Obviously, I'm going to try to do my best and like think about the strategies to make it very readable. But you have to, at the end of the day, be like, I can't control the world's reactions. I can only control what I do and do my best in my process and my research and how I'm constructing this book and, write something that makes me feel deeply. And I'm hoping that the world will have that reaction. I think that's the best way to go about art, because if you get too in your head, if you're too letting in all that insecurity, you're going to be frozen with paralysis and you will never be able to get to your keyboard.
That's right, put that fear to the side. That's right indeed, just charge forward, y'all. Don't worry about what people think. They might not even think anyway, especially nowadays. They're probably smartphone zombies anyway half the time, so it's okay. Create your work, create your art, y'all. Start putting it out into the world. That's right. Just splash some ink onto the page. It'll be fine. Or some wonderful letters onto the screen. You'll be fine.
I feel like that's like a good, I feel like you could do like ASMR. I feel like you have like a very good radio voice. I feel like you could just do like ASMR, like encouragement for writers and just be like, everything will be okay. Don't worry. Don't listen to your inner critic. I think people will really like that.
Yeah, might even try that one day. We'll see. Yes, indeed. That's kind of big on YouTube. It's like, yep, ASMR, y'all. It's right, indeed. 8-hour videos of affirmations with random music to put you in a mood that's chill and sleepy.
Yeah, and then you have to do, like, the tapping where you, like, take the glass and, like, it'll be fine. Don't worry. Everyone will love your work. And then like the whispers and all that. I love ASMR. I think it's fun. I think that would be, I think I would listen to that.
Yeah, an idea to spice up my YouTube content. Good deal. Good deal indeed. Speaking of YouTube content, your YouTube page is amazing, by the way. It's so darn organized. I'm like, dude, this chick freaking gets it. And like, she's only just getting started indeed. So my goodness. So I guess with that, you're a fellow podcast host indeed. So what would you consider your top three lessons learned from starting, growing, and running your magical show?
Yeah, I think that the my podcast is kind of like an extension of my Substack, and basically I use this AI tool called Wondercraft that turns my Substack posts into my podcast feed. So it's not actually me talking, it is an AI trained on my voice reading my posts aloud. And it's pretty accurate. My own mother didn't realize it wasn't me with a microphone recording them all. And I think that as somebody who I just wouldn't have time to record every single post that I write, this tool is actually really, really interesting. And I have like a whole kind of tutorial on my YouTube about how to use it. But I think that like it's kind of interesting in the podcast space because obviously there's awesome shows like yours where I love listening to the conversation. I love kind of getting deep into what's going on with different people's lives. But I also think there's another kind of podcast that I like where I don't want to sit in front of my laptop and read every blog post, Substack post that I'm getting in my inbox. And so it's really nice to hit play and like listen to things while I'm, you know, running around town or running errands or, you know, cleaning the kitchen or doing whatever. And so, or on a train to Cambridge, like I was the other day. So having audio posts for your audience as a writer, it's really easy to repurpose your written content into podcast formats. And that's kind of the most interesting thing for me. And I host my podcast on Substack, so I can easily hit publish on a post and immediately adds it to my podcast feed. And so I think as writers, the key thing for us is to have systems to repurpose our work so that we can really dig in and write a great Substack post or a great blog post. And then everything else just kind of moves around that to repurpose it and get our stuff out there. So we don't have to create all of these individual pieces of content all over the internet and just be run ragged trying to please the algorithms. It's about doing less, better, and working smarter, not harder. And that's something that I firmly believe in, both on my freelancing side of things and my creative work and my work as a writer, content creator, is how can we do less better and be more of essentialist. And that's one of my favorite books is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. I think I'm butchering his name, but that's the book that kind of really made me think about how can we do fewer things better so that we can actually get more value and more benefits out of the work we actually are doing.
Indeed, that's what I'm talking about. Indeed. So that's right, folks. Have a system to repurpose your content and do less better, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. And heck, even use AI as your helper. That's right, indeed. Because you had me fooled, too. I thought that
Amazing. It's working.
was freaking you, too. Shoot. AI has gotten so much better. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. The technology messiah of ChatGPT has come. So that means the robots are now ready to take over the humans, just about. They're plotting. They're like, yay, we're going to take over all the humans. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. We're going to turn all the humans into all Alex Jones copies. That's right, indeed. Just not as extreme. We're stuck. My goodness, so is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're on the guest side of the podcast game?
No, I think it kind of, I think everybody has a different approach. It's always nice to be on different podcasts to see the different topics that come up and the things that we think about. It's cool to have, see how people think about things differently. But I think that the thing that a lot of people don't remember from the writer side of things is that we can do anything that we set our minds to, whether you want to publish a book and get paid to be a writer as your job. There's so many different permutations of how you can earn money as a writer. And I just hope that people don't immediately think, oh, being a writer means you're going to be broke, because I thought that growing up and I was scared of becoming a writer until I proved myself wrong. I was able to figure out how to make money as a writer and have that be my full-time job while I travel the world. And I think so many other people should not let that fear take over themselves and their world, and to allow themselves to jump headfirst into this stuff. And that's what my Substack from the Desk of Amy Pseudo covers, which is how to be a sustainable working writer, making money from your art, from your writing, from freelance writing, and from different income sources so that you can do the things that you really love.
I'm talking about today. That's coming from an introvert, if I'm not mistaken, right? INFJ, if I'm not mistaken.
INTJ, yeah, but I think as an introvert, I think it's important to know that you don't have to be an extrovert and be out in the world all the time to be successful as a writer. There's just, it all comes back to the systems, and I think that that's what I teach on all of my content, is how to thrive as an introvert and as your natural abilities as a writer.
Yeah, indeed, heck yeah, indeed, that's what I'm talking about today. Yeah, that's right, indeed. If y'all ain't taking notes this episode, you're doing yourself a disservice, y'all. That's right, indeed. She's been dropping gems, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Might as well should add a jewelry store manager to the bio, y'all. That's right, indeed. A digital nomad jewelry store manager, y'all. That's right, indeed. How can you manage a jewelry store when she's traveling the world? Don't worry, that's the point. It's probably online, you know. That's right. Yeah, all the
yeah,
gems.
Drop shipping.
Yeah, see, there you go. The drop shipping. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Yeah.
That's right, indeed. It's like Temu, but better. She doesn't have the orange. She's got a desk. She has red apples. Granny Smith apple, green one, too. Oh, man. So, my question for you, if your fabulous book, The Nomad Detective Volume 1, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would have to say an Eggs Benedict, because I think that that's like one of my favorite breakfast foods, because it's like complex, there's different textures, but it's really satisfying and filling. And so I hope that people who are reading the book find that it's very satisfying and filling and a little decadent, but at the end of the day, doesn't leave you hungry.
Like, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. Apologies to all the Arnolds out there talking about Eggs Benedict Arnold, you know. You betrayed us. She loves Europe too much. They've absorbed another one. Oh, well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
I think to take more creative risks. And I think that that's something that I was lucky to be really encouraged by my partner, Kyle, to really prioritize my work of fiction this year. And I think that it's really scary to take a bet on yourself and your fiction. I think as a debut fiction author, it was very terrifying to put my work out there. But I think all of us can benefit from having the courage to put ourselves out there and be vulnerable and put our work out there, because I know my life has been changed by a lot of the fiction that I've read, and the world could benefit hugely from the work that you're able to put out there. And I think a lot of people don't realize how many people need their art, and you just have to make it and put it out there and have that courage, and it'll pay off.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, indeed. Folks on the outside looking in, being like, creative risk, sound like she's freaking doing it for real in real time, y'all. And she's freaking good at it, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. You hear the energy, you feel the energy, indeed. Hashtag amazing Amy for a reason, y'all. That's right, indeed. So, creative risk, y'all. So, go ahead, jump off that metaphorical cliff into your creative zone, y'all. That's right, indeed. Don't worry, the marshmallows of creativity will catch you. That's right, indeed. And you get to bite into the marshmallow. That's right, indeed. And if you bite too much, you'll become a Pillsbury Doughboy or a Dough Girl. And then you'll say, woohoo. And you'll poke your own belly. And then words will come out. And then you'll take over the planet. And then you might even learn how to be samurai afterwards. That's right. That's right, indeed. That's right. Don't worry. Amy's totally not wearing a Pillsbury Doughboy hat during his interview. But folks probably need to buy a few copies of your books and put them on their head and balance them. So for those who need to do just that and keep up with you, your journey, and your content, Amy, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Yeah, you can find all my links to my newsletter, to my travel blog, to my books, to everything on my website, amysuto.com. And my last name is spelled S-U-T as in Tom, O. amysuto.com has everything. You can find me on all my social platforms at my handle, Suto Science.
One of the best company names ever.
Thank you. I love a good pun.
Yeah, you're my kind of people. I'm like, yeah. You're like, yeah, this is pseudoscience. It's not really science, but you know. What are you talking about? This is pseudoscience. It's the science of writing and being freaking fabulous. I'm like, what? That ain't what it says dictionary. Nah, look it up. It's a real thing. That's right indeed. There's a cute lady on the cover of the website too. You'll see it. It's like, oh, pseudoscience. Oh, I see what she did there. That's right indeed. It's a pseudoscience, y'all. It's the real science. You don't even have to put on a lab coat. But you may have to pay tribute, put an apple on a metaphorical desk by subscribing to our Substack, y'all. That's right indeed. The Substack is all the stacks. That's right. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, before a random cat tries to jump on the stack and turn over all the metaphorical pages, any parting words before we close up shop, Amy?
No, I think that if anybody wants to learn how to become a freelancer, I also wrote a book called Six Figure Freelance Writer, A Holistic Guide on Finding Freedom in Freelance. So that was my first nonfiction book that a lot of people said have really helped them build their freelancing careers. And then, of course, my new book, The Digital Nomad Volume 1, is available on Amazon as well. And so everyone can find all those links on my website.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for 3, and be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.